Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm delighted you could be with us today. You know, in almost the entire 5 years of Seek Reality's history, we haven't taken questions on air, which is why we usually are not even live, because I discovered early on that even very good questions will interrupt the listeners' opportunities to learn from our wonderful guests. But still, you know, I've always wanted to answer your questions. So every week I encourage you to ask your questions through the contact block on robertagrimes.com. I used to be able to say, if you don't hear from me within 24 hours, send flowers. But as Seek Reality has grown so much, the volume of questions and comments from listeners also has grown. And since I still respond to everything personally, sometimes my responses can take me as long as a week to write and send back to you. I'm so sorry. If you don't hear in more than a week, though, please do write again, since you may not have given me quite the right email address. That happens sometimes. So for years, I've been receiving and answering all these interesting questions. And there are days now, frankly, when I almost do nothing but answer questions. And I'm delighted to do that. But it occurs to me, it takes a while for things to occur to me, it has occurred to me that if other people have been interested in hearing answers to these questions, you might be interested too. So today we're going to be sharing some of those questions and answers from Seek Reality listeners over the years. Let's call this, everything you kind of want to know, but you never really did get around to actually sending in an email. And maybe I'll be able to guess it and answer that question for you today. So I'm going to be removing, of course, everything that's identifying, because some people, you know, pour out their hearts in some detail. So these are not meant to be something you'll be able to guess belongs to someone else, but instead, these are answers that I think are a really good potpourri of information on all the things we talk about on Seek Reality. And I'm always glad to be able to refine my aim, incidentally. So I'll try to answer them in later podcasts where they might fit. But let's look at some of them today. And I'm going to start with someone. This is funny. He asked 15 questions in one email. He said, I hope you won't mind if I ask a lot of questions. And he asked 15 on all kinds of things. So let's look at what he asked. The first thing, you could tell he's young, and I'm not even sure it's a man, actually, but it sounds like a man. Will I be able to shift shape into a different or fictional creature in the afterlife? You know, that's a new one on me. I said, theoretically, perhaps you will, but almost certainly you won't want to do anything like that. There's evidence, though, and this is true, that you can play act in various historical periods, and there's even some evidence that you can experiment with inhabiting living creatures that live on distant planets. This is all part of the fun we have when we first go back. That's why I called my book about the afterlife The Fun of Dying, because, frankly, it's a heck of a lot of fun and in so many different ways. But as far as the historical periods are concerned, apparently there's an old Wild West one. I think there's a medieval one. But these are places where you can go, you dress up, you live as if you were in that period. I believe there's a 1950s one as well. That was a wonderful time. So there's a lot of fun stuff you can do, but shape-shifting, I don't think is something that they even care about at that point. Maybe they could do it if they wanted to, though. Next question, is there public transportation in the Summerland? Because I would like to go to Japan. They have all sorts of public transportation there, including bullet trains, for heaven's sake. So are there bullet trains in the afterlife? And the answer is no, because we don't need them. There's no need for public transportation in the afterlife levels, because once you go there, you're pretty quickly able to go anywhere you want in the entire universe and beyond it in the greater reality by thought, and it's instantaneous. Think about that. You and your friend want to go spend some time on the farthest planet of Pluto or in some other galaxy at the edge of the universe. You want to go spend a little time there. You think it, and you're there. So there's really no need for any other transportation than that. But curiously, when we first get there, we want to do some things with transportation. So there are people who always wanted a yacht. They have it there for a while till they get bored with it. There are people who always wanted a Jaguar or whatever. They have it. And what's funny is everything is propelled by mind. So there's no fumes, no exhaust, nothing about it is messy or noisy. It just is all silent. But you can, there are people also who fly around in weird little planes. It's just part of the fun. But anywhere you want to go, you can go instantly by mind. And Max Planck could explain how that's possible, but probably no other physicist at this point could. Is the Summerland a planet? No, it's actually a different dimension. It's right exactly where we are. So when you die, it's very much like changing channels. You just, you know, you're on channel 4, and what your mind is doing is tuning into a level of reality, which we all think is real, but of course it's not real. In fact, it's not solid either. That's just another illusion. But then you decide you want to go, well, then you die. Let's put it that way. Then you decide it's time to die. So all that happens is your mind switches to a slightly higher vibration, a slightly different channel, and it picks up a whole new solid reality in exactly the same place. It's that simple, and it's that easy, and it's that beautiful. There's no tunnel. There's no light. That's a rescue device that happens in near-death experiences, but I've never heard of a natural completed death in which there was such a thing. No need for it. Okay, number 4. Instead of playing a video game, can I actually be in the video game? I've never played a video game, so this kind of is lost on me. But he's wondering, or she, can I play along the story of that game as one of the characters who's in it? I said you probably won't want to do that anyway, but who knows? I'm sure if it's important to more than a few people, you'll be able to do that. One interesting and little-known fact is that technology does happen in the afterlife. I remember when I was in my heyday of reading all these early 20th century communications, it kind of bothered me that they didn't have radios, they didn't have any kind of records or anything that would have been Earth technology then. And people seem to be disappointed about that. Well, more recently, there's been a lot of technology developed there. For example, now, there is a kind of screen. It looks like a painting on the wall or a flat screen TV. And through it, you can watch the lives of people that you love on Earth. If someone, they don't just watch us go through our day, usually, at least who knows, but I'm told that what they'll do is if there's someone is having some special event, a wedding or, some event that, the family wants to watch, or making a presentation, getting a Nobel Prize, who knows, the family will gather around and watch it happen there, So now I hear people saying, why would they need to? Well, we can be at the same level that you are, or if we're a dead person, just by lowering our vibration. But the problem is that it's what we see or perceive is often imperfect because our vibration may not be quite low enough. But apparently with these flat screens, they can do it and see everything clearly. So I don't know what else they have there, but we have a lot of fun electronics to find and enjoy once we arrive. And that's new. That's within the last few years. Oh, this is related. Number 5, can I listen to any song I like in my eternal mind while going wherever I like? In other words, do I have some kind of internal iPod thing going? There's no evidence of that. What happens, though, is that the key people in our musical lives who have gone on ahead of us, many of them still perform there. The names we hear most often are Elvis. Apparently, he's huge there. Everybody has seen Elvis. You can get early Elvis. You can get, Las Vegas Elvis. You can get later Elvis when he was fat. Whatever kind of Elvis, apparently he's always performing there, and he really enjoys it, even though it's said that he is much higher in terms of his own spiritual development than the level 3, which is where most people are at this point. But he likes to be there with people. He said he's going to keep doing it until his very, very youngest, when he was here on Earth, the youngest people who were his fans will then die of old age, and then they'll all, I guess, go up to higher levels together. Frank Sinatra, John Lennon, I'm sure there are a lot of others too, but those are the ones that have been reported who perform there. You can just go see them anytime you like. Now, number six is, I can imagine level three of the afterlife, but what about level five? If I'm trying to achieve the top of the Summerland, how can I imagine that? Now, I should just say parenthetically, the Summerland is what the Vikings called the afterlife. You can imagine they lived in Denmark and Norway in cold, snowy places. So it sounded like heaven when they said the Summerland. And we commonly use that term now just to describe all of reality, because heaven, of course, is a religious term, and there's nothing whatsoever about it that's religious. But we don't know as much about the upper levels, level five, level six, but those who have been there say it's beautiful. We can go to higher levels, provided we have someone comfortable on that level as our guide. They can use their energy to shield us. If you try to go above what should be your normal level, apparently the energy becomes unbearable. Imagine, you know, being right outside a jet aircraft that's blowing noise and energy at you or something. I mean, it's just, they say it, you can't do it until you raise your own vibration. My wonderful friend Thomas Jefferson, who spoke through Leslie Flint in about 1960, talked about, now we believe he is about the top of level five, so he's pretty well developed, but he talked about being taken higher by a friend who was naturally at level six, and he said he can't even describe how beautiful it is there. The flowers even richer, everything just more glorious. By the way, the sky is usually not blue. There are all kinds of wonderful colors and shimmering that happen in the sky, because of course there's no need for it to be blue. Here that's just a natural effect of the atmosphere. But yes, it's unimaginably beautiful the higher we go. And if you really feel the need to kind of get a taste of it in order to want it badly enough, there are people there who will help you go to it and experience it. Number seven, he asked, when do you think the soul pump phone will be released? The soul phone is something being developed by several people, one of whom is Dr. Gary Schwartz. We don't know. All of that is cloaked in secrecy. I've seen some progress, but not recently. I just don't know what's going to happen with it. But you should know there are a number of technologies being developed now that could happen much more quickly. The key is to have an electronic way to reliably communicate with your great-great-aunt Martha. A reliable electronic way for someone to attend his or her own funeral and give a little speech. All of that, once that happens, it'll be impossible anymore for scientists or religionists to deny the truth. That being the case, it'll be a new world altogether. I've talked about this before, and I'll probably talk about it again before long because it's so important. What I think has the most chance now of happening first is the communication stations. They exist in the reasonably low afterlife levels, around three or four, so that most people can use them. And they're actually a solid place. It's as solid there, by the way, as it is here. They say that's real life, not this. That's how solid it is. But these stations are communicating electronically with two stations on Earth. There are others around the world, too. But the North American station is relatively new, and it communicates in English. The Brazilian station is older, and, of course, it communicates in Portuguese. And I have seen some wonderful things coming out of the stations. I believe that will be really the first news to break on the world about how we can easily electronically talk to those we love that we just have lost track of briefly, and they'll be back in our lives. It's going to be beautiful. You can tell he's young because his eighth question is, will I be able to have sexual experiences in the afterlife? And that's a good, and he says, will I be able to gain the upper, if I've never had sex, will I be able to have sex there? The answer to that is, the good news is apparently you've got the equipment. The bad news is there's no sex drive on those bodies that we have in the afterlife. They tell us they have no interest in sex at all. The thing that they do instead, though, is apparently a lot better. There's a body melding that they do. As best we can determine, two solid, seemingly solid people will step one into the other. They do this standing up. And it produces a pleasure that's just as intense as an orgasm, but it's whole body. It's like This is a real trip. And you can do it with anybody. It's not, there's no morality attached to it. Nothing, in other words, like what happens on Earth. One of the things that's interesting to me is that apparently when people first discover this, when they first get there, it's like, yay, and they're doing it all the time. But very quickly, there are so many other pleasures there that very quickly people seem to lose interest in doing what you or I would think would be like the most fun you could possibly have. So that gives you a sense of just how much fun you have ahead of you. But you can't, I'm supposed to say here, if you kill yourself, it's a whole other ball game. I know it's hard to wait. But we all have to wait until it's time for us to go naturally, because when we go naturally, everything that's good will happen to us, and we will get there, and it'll be beautiful. And believe it, speaking of someone in her 70s now who about 10 minutes ago was 16, life goes a lot faster than you think it will when you're looking at it from the other end. So what else? So he's really trying to understand this. He asked, what does it feel like in the Summerland? Well, it's hard to explain adequately because it's so wonderful. It looks a lot like a very lush green, full of colors even you haven't even seen on Earth because they're beyond the visible light spectrum, a beautiful, beautiful garden-like place. In the distance, it's very culturally specific. So, for example, there's a different Summerland for English-speaking people in Great Britain than there is from the North American Summerland, which has Rocky Mountains and foothills and all of that surrounding it as part of it. There are beautiful buildings of all descriptions, and because there's no gravity, some of them look as if they can't possibly stand, but they can because there's nothing pulling them down. And because there's no decay whatsoever, not a single petal ever drops, everything is permanent. The flowers are aware. And they'll turn to you, they'll express love to you, they give off an energy and a music. It's very hard for us even to imagine how beautiful it is. And it's always a perfect temperature. I've seen people saying, well, it's always 78 degrees. Maybe it's 76 you'd prefer. Maybe that's then what it'll be. It's always daytime, although it's possible if you really, really want a rainy day, they'll give you one. But by and large, it's always a beautiful sunny day. After we've had a first nap when we first go home, we really never need to sleep, and so we don't. We're doing things that are fun all the time, every day. Now, one thing people wonder about is, can you eat food in the afterlife? And this is his 10th question. Yes, you can, but you don't have any hunger, and you don't have any internal organs. So not only are you not hungry for something, but you also never feel full, because what happens is whatever it is you're eating, although it's solid, as you're eating it, immediately just disappears. It wasn't, of course, solid at all. Mikey Morgan, who last died really in the 1600s and then wanted to be able to talk to us, and so therefore he took a brief additional lifetime in the 90s that ended, I don't know, early in the 21st century. He says that what he really craved for a while was Chipotle, for whatever reason. He wanted a burrito or whatever from there. But he said, I could have as many as I wanted, but I was never hungry. I never felt full. And the taste, they also say, is whatever you remember the taste to have been. So you won't have any new flavors there. It's just not important. The things that the pleasures of the earth are so much less than the pleasures we're going to have when we're there, that these things we think are going to be important to us really apparently are not. What kind of cities are there? One of the interesting features is, as I just said, it's very culturally specific. So, for example, if you are traveling in the Far East, if say you're on a lifetime trip to China, this was your dream and you planned for it and you went to China, but then you died on that trip and you died in China. Well, what you would first see when you got to your afterlife would probably be pagodas, especially if it was an accidental death. You would go to their Summerland. You would then go, oh my goodness, and call to your loved ones. They would come and get you and escort you to the North American Summerland. It's very rare for people to go off track that way, but if you find yourself looking at things that don't look like what you would expect as an American or whatever your culture is, just call to someone you know is dead who loves you, and they'll come get you and take you home. All right. He wants to know if he's advanced enough, if he can mind create a planet. One of the reasons I like these questions is that they give me a chance to talk about things I probably don't normally talk about. As we grow spiritually, we more and more are working in teams of people who are at a similar level of development. Those teams are what do the mind creating. So you can, once you're advanced enough, it appears to be the case that you can indeed be part of mind creating a planet. I remember reading many years ago when I was reading, you know, early 20th century communication, someone who was already level six, this person had been very apparently spiritually advanced, was a woman when she died. And she said what she was learning to do was invent new flowers. And she said, it's a lot harder. I remember this vividly. It's a lot harder than you'd think. I would think it would be impossible. So I thought that was a little bit humble of her to say that. But we don't know. Now you're saying, well, what about God? Well, here's the thing. The dead tell us repeatedly that God exists, but God does not have a body, and God never appears and never speaks individually. When we are interacting with what we think is God in whatever situation, we're interacting with our guides. Now, that's a distinction without a difference, because every human mind is inextricably part of God. So when you're interacting with your guides, you and someone else who also, both of you are part of the mind of God, you're all working together. And it's just that as we develop more and more spiritually, we're more and more satisfied to be mind creating with a group of people. See, here's the thing. When you come into your body, you have access to, they say, I've seen estimates of 5% and up to 25%. I think it's toward the lower range. That's all of your conscious mind you're able to access when you're in a body, because you're stripped down, you're in a spiritual gym, you're working out to grow spiritually. And so with that little bit of a mind, it's hard for us really to understand things. Repeatedly, the dead will tell us when we ask complex questions that we can't understand the answer. But when we get home, we really will understand the answers. He asks now about my book, Liberating Jesus. He says, is following the Gospels the only way to live a perfect life while on earth? No, of course not. I believe it's the easiest way to grow spiritually. It's astonishing how easy it is when you follow the Gospels to grow spiritually. My book about that is The Fun of Growing Forever, and it's laughably easy. But then again, that's what he said. He said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So no, there are all sorts of ways to grow spiritually. It's just that for Americans or for people who live in a busy, complex life, often what you want to do is something that's going to be easy and straightforward and work with the rest of your life. You don't have time to learn how to meditate, you know, follow a guru or chant or do all any of the other things that you might think you would need to grow spiritually. No, all you have to do is in the right way, follow the teachings of Jesus, and you can grow light years in really what amounts to months. He wants to know if he will be able to work toward goals in the afterlife. Like he wants to get his body really fit or train his brain to be smarter. Well, here's the great news. Very soon after you get home, your mind reemerges with its your vast eternal mind. That basically you, according Mikey Morgan said, you leave it behind in a suitcase. It isn't really that physical, but you do emerge with your eternal mind. And when you merge with it, you have all sorts of memories and all sorts of mental powers you cannot imagine now. So you already are infinitely smart. You don't have to try to get smarter. And as far as your body's concerned, if you decide you want to look like a bodybuilder, just think, I want to look like a bodybuilder, and your body will look that way. So that's it's really so much easier to live there. That's why people there really don't want to come here unless they're really craving to grow spiritually, because it's hard duty to be here. He asks, his 15th question is whether he should read about NDEs to increase his knowledge about the afterlife. The reality is that no NDE-er who comes back has actually been to where the dead are. The dead tell us this repeatedly, and it's important to never forget it, because near-death experiences are not objective experiences in an objective place. They're designed around what we need by our guides, and they're wonderful experiences, and there's much we learn from them about what the afterlife is like. We couldn't learn any other way. And since so many people have had them, it's broken on the consciousness of the larger planet, which is wonderful, but they are not trips to the afterlife. Now, you can start with an NDE and end up in the afterlife. In the more extensive ones, there's often a place where there's a barrier, and you're told if you don't go back, if you cross this barrier, you will die and you'll never be able to go back. And then they make their pitch, your life is not done, and or whatever, remember you have children, whatever it is. But yes, you can choose in many of these NDEs to die and not come back. But then you truly cannot come back. So I hope that that's clear to everyone. And the reason it's so important to me that to make sure you know it's true is that there are about one in seven NDEs is hellish. And hellish NDEs scare people to death because they think they're real and that those people were actually in hell. They're not real. There is no fiery hell. We've never heard any report of a fiery hell. There's also no judgment by God or by any religious figure. All of that is just religious folklore. But if someone is an afraid religious person, that person may well temporarily put himself or herself into this illusion of a fiery hell. So, reading about NDEs will not increase your knowledge about the afterlife, but it certainly will help you become more comfortable with the fact that your mind is eternal. It easily lives apart from your body. And what's amazing and wonderful is that people who have NDEs have mind sight and mind hearing. So if you were born without eyes and you're having an NDE, this actually has happened, you can see just fine. In fact, only then do you know what seeing is even like. Same with hearing. So NDEs are good, but they're limited in what they're able to do. What I like most about them is how they can transform people's lives. And I'm going to have a guest in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about how her life was transformed by her near-death experience. I've been getting many more questions about Christianity since Liberating Jesus was published about three and a half years ago. And some of these are very religious questions, so I try to be sensitive in my answers, but it can be hard because I'm seeing people being so misled. I know here's one that was recent. This woman talked about her husband being disabled and having died. So now she knows he doesn't have his disability anymore, and he'll have a perfect body when Christ returns and we get new bodies which will never die or be ill. She asked, when we die before Christ comes back, are we in heaven or in a spirit world? Where is it we're waiting for Jesus? Now, of course, all of that comes from Christianity and none of it is true. And so what I said to her just very gently is that you actually get that new body as soon as you transition. He had a wonderful new body. Between you and me, people will often initially have the same handicaps they had when they were here until they realize I don't have them anymore, and then their bodies are perfect. But I didn't tell her that. But then she went on to say that I had said, I guess she asked a question, I answered it. In a previous communication, you indicated Jesus died on the cross to show us that death is an illusion. And I'm struggling with the scripture, Matthew 26, 27 to 28, which states, this is the blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. And she wanted me to explain that. All right, here's the problem. To begin with, the gospel words were passed down orally for at least 60 years. So if you've ever played telephone with children, you understand what a problem that is. Then they were written down, but he spoke Aramaic. And very early, they were translated into Greek. And from Greek, they were much later translated into English. On top of that, in the year 325, the Council of Nicaea deliberately edited the Gospels. They added and subtracted things. So that's the problem we have. The Gospels are genuine. They are words of a genuine advanced being who came to us embodying God. This is huge, what Jesus did. But the Christian teachings do not take his teachings seriously. The Christian teachings are more mechanical, and they're about sacrificial redemption, which is what she's concerned about. What Jesus did apparently was to hold a last supper with his disciples and say, whenever you guys have supper, just think of me. But eating the flesh of Jesus, drinking the blood of Jesus is barbaric, and it does not seem to make any afterlife difference. Believing that God, that Jesus died for your sins and redeemed you from God is barbaric. Nothing like that ever happens. Instead, God loves us all, even if we've never heard of Jesus, even if we heard of Jesus and we're not happy with those teachings and went our own way. We all are perfectly loved. Religions make no difference in the afterlife. In fact, there's really no religious practice there at all, which I guess I'm not surprised about. That's another problem with, of course, near-death experiences. They're often religiously tinged if people are religious. But none of that is true about the actual afterlife. Please know, too, that Jesus is quoted a number of times in the Gospels saying the only way to get to God is with him or through him. And I don't believe he ever said that. He says repeatedly in the Gospels that his teachings are what matters. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So what he must have said was, my teachings are the way, the truth, and the light. Nobody comes to the Master or the Father except through my teachings. If he had said that, that would have been probably true. It is the easiest way to get to God at the highest possible level is with his teachings. But he certainly, Jesus never said, and God never judged anybody based on whether or not they'd accepted Jesus as their Savior. And I'm sorry if that bothers you, but here's the fact. God is perfect love. Nobody who is perfect love could possibly want to see one of his children murdered and so he can forgive the others. That makes no sense. I was a Christian for more than 50 years. What finally helped me see the light is that truly and deeply and profoundly makes no sense. Jesus also spoke in iterations over days because there were always... For him to have said what he would have wanted to say would have been an immediate death sentence when he was on earth. And so what he did was instead to speak over days of time, knowing that his followers would remember and put it together, but that the spies from who were always there from the temple would keep changing, and so they wouldn't put it together. So over days he told us that God doesn't judge anyone, and neither does he. He said, for not even the Father judges anyone, but he has given all judgment to the Son, so all may honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. That's John 5:22-23. Okay, so Jesus is our new judge. Then, probably a day or two later, he says, if anyone hears my sayings and does not keep them, I do not judge him, for I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. John 12:47. So someone is saying, aha, save. Well, not on a cross. He came to save us by teaching us how to grow spiritually and bring the kingdom of God on earth. That's a much more important kind of saving. We are our own afterlife judge, and he even talked about that. He said, so do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. This is exactly true. Because you are your own afterlife judge, if you haven't learned how to forgive, and if you've done some difficult things in your life, you're going to have a lot of trouble forgiving yourself. And he talked about the consequences of that. The consequences are rather dire, because the lower your vibration is, and if you can't forgive yourself, your vibration will lower. The lower it is, the more likely you are to end up in what he called the outer darkness, where there'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth. I've got to talk about that more at some point, but I don't like talking about negative stuff, so I kind of don't really want to. One final question. Someone asked about power. In The Fun of Growing Forever, you mentioned that the more loving consciousness is, the more powerful it is, and at the source level, its power is infinite. So if I reach the source level, will I become omnipotent in the afterlife? What happens at the source level, we are told, is that we merge with the source. I was very troubled about that for a long time, but I have been given to understand that we'll never lose awareness. We're going to have God's awareness. Remember how I talked about the higher we are vibrating, the more likely we are to want to work together? That's true. And at the very highest level, when we join the source, we will be in bliss, and we will be working in bliss with other people who are at that level. The higher we go, the happier we are. And so I think it's very important, for us not to sort of despair and think that we can't do it. You can get to level six in one lifetime. All you need to do is want it badly enough and make that the reason and the purpose of your life, which to me is what I've kind of made. No, I've made teaching you more important to me even than that. I want you to be able to get there even before me. I'll be delighted. Just send me a postcard, if you will. Okay, for this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm really glad you could be with us today. I got a lot off my chest. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Please understand my role in this is just to ease your path, to help you get there in a few years' time, there to understanding what's going on. It took me 5 decades. I want it to take you a year or two at most. But it's going to be important you do a lot of this work on your own. Don't take my word for anything. Instead, let me guide you toward doing whatever research needs to be done. Each of my fun books has a bibliography so that you can quickly, and it's annotated, so you sort of know what all these books are. So you can choose the things that you need to help you fill in the gaps in your understanding. And people have asked me, how long will it take to do this? If you have a couple of years to devote to really trying to understand, it won't even take you that long, I don't believe. And again, I'm always at the other end. If you go to the contact block on robertagrimes.com, I'm always at the other end and always really eager to answer your questions. So just ask me a question if something is troubling you. Next week, our guest will be our wonderful friend and frequent guest, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. Our topic will be what is really the hardest part for everyone studying the greater reality to really get our minds around. We're going to be talking about the fact that there is no objective time. There's no objective space either. So therefore, everything is simultaneously infinite and beyond infinite in size, and at the same time smaller than a pencil dot. That's why, and we'll talk next week about the whole issue of the Big Bang and how things got started, because we are told repeatedly the only thing that exists is now. So now is eternity. Now is both just an instant of time, and it's also eternity. We're told we're going to understand this a lot better when we get home, but meanwhile, Dr. R. Craig Hogan, who is, I think he is probably the most advanced person I've ever known who lived in a body, and he's very good at teaching these things and making them simple. And he's going to help us next week to talk about what is really an extraordinary and mind-boggling topic. And so please join us. I think you'll enjoy it. This week, of course, our guest has been your host, trying to sort of share with you some of the questions other people are asking, maybe to jog your mind, make you think about questions that are kind of bothering you, or just give you information you hadn't even wondered about. Again, ask me a question, and I will do my best to answer it, although, frankly, it can take a little time now because I get so many every day. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together. And for young children, there's The Fun of Meeting Jesus. I'm working on another fun book, and I'm also working on another children's book, which should both be out before the end of the year. And you can find my books, of course, on Amazon always and through bookstores. And the adult books are also available as audiobooks. If you are very poor and you desperately need a book, let me know. Just don't tell my publisher, and I'll send you the PDF. Of course, again, if you want to talk about anything at all, or certainly any of my books, just go to robertagrimes.com. I answer every email if you give me the correct email. Some people miss a letter, and so it never gets back to them. Past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, through the Seek Reality app that you can find for free in the iTunes App Store. And we're adding a couple of additional venues, which I'll be telling you about in another week. Year earlier episodes are being rebroadcast all over again by our wonderful friends at Dream Vision 7 Radio. So you can always find me somewhere. And I hear often from people who say, actually, what they usually say is, I just discovered you on YouTube, and now I'm doing all your podcasts, and I'm doing them, one, two, or three a day or something. I usually don't even listen to them, so I think, oh, you poor soul. But people tell me it really helps to get the validation and reinforcement that someone who has done this work and is telling you the truth, and I always will tell you the truth, that there is hard stuff, I tell you about it too. So you don't need to worry that I'm soft-coding it. It really is as wonderful as I make it seem, unless you go off track, and we probably should talk about that a little bit more. It's rare, but if it happens, it's not pleasant. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, knowing that you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.